Welcome back to another episode of Professionals Podcasting. In this episode, attorney Meredith Bott sits down with President and Vice President of Life with Dignity, Sue Slotch Cutler and Fran Petrarski, to discuss the support they provide to many of her estate planning clients.
Hello, everyone. So glad that you could join us today in our podcast. We have very, very special guests. We have Sue Slotch Cutler and Fran Petrarski of Living Life with Dignity. They have this amazing company that helps our clients as well as other amazing other people to help with care management, helping with seniors, helping with so many different parts of their lives that I think is really important for people to know about them and what they do. So it's really great to have both of you. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you, Meritas.
Good. I'm glad you can join us today. So I thought what we could do is pretty low key. There's no specific, template of what we're doing today. We're just going to kind of talk a little bit about what you guys offer. And then maybe I can share a little bit of some of the things our clients deal with. So maybe things that, you know, they have questions about. And then I always say, well, just talk to Living Life with Dignity. They'll help you with that. So,
okay. So basically we're case management, or as you referred to, care management, advocacy. We do some guardianship. We act as powers of attorney, either for healthcare or property for folks that may not have people to assign to those directives, or for folks that we might act as agent for their family member that is power of attorney, because it's a much bigger role than most people know. And we also can act as executor or trustee for someone in the same capacity.
Wonderful. And that is definitely something, Mike, all the time I get the question of, oh, who should I choose? And it's such a varied answer, of course. So, of course, some people have people that they are automatically drawn to, obviously a spouse, a child, and those are very common ones. But when they don't have either of those as options, they usually ask me, well, who should we choose? And that's where I get a little bit like, well, a third party is perfectly fine. What are your thoughts on having a personal, you know, a family friend just to choose a person versus having a third party, company like yourselves?
I can jump in on that one for a second here. What I always tell people, and I'm sure you do this too, is, you know, a lot of us automatically go to the eldest child or the daughter. You know, the daughter always gets the one. Yeah, here, daughter,
yes.
All of it. But what they really need to be asking is, when this comes down to, I'm in the hospital, I'm in a bed, things are not going well, can you take the emotion out of it and make the decision?
Right.
And I think that's where the push comes to shove, I think, with who you need to choose, because having us come in, it's not that we're heartless and we don't care about our clients, because we care very much, but we can go into a situation and take that piece out of it and look at the facts of what's happening and say, what did this person want? What were their wishes? Mm-hmm. And if someone cannot follow through on the wishes of the person who wants to put them in charge of their, you know, healthcare end of life, then they need to, first off, that person who's being asked needs to say, you know what, I can't. I don't think that I can really be that person for you. Mm-hmm. Or they need to then, you know, again, look for someone else if they feel like, when they have the conversation, the person is not quite on board with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, what I look at too is, I think there's two aspects to what you're talking about as far as powers of attorney are concerned.
Yeah.
So the first one is what Sue's talking about, the healthcare aspect of it. And so what I see oftentimes that people do is they select somebody that's going to give them what they want now, yeah, today. Like, you know, they're going to let me stay in my house, or, you know, that could be the person that's a pushover for them, you know, that they can be really demanding on and get them to do what they want. And it's not that people like us, we don't want you to stay in the house. We look at role as a role of power of attorney as, first of all, it doesn't take effect until that person doesn't have the capacity anymore or needs that support and they enlist us.
Right.
But second of all, it's, you know, also about keeping that individual safe, healthy and well.
Yeah.
And what I find happens with a lot of family members when you're talking about power of attorney is what Sue was saying about the emotional aspect of it. They worry about, what is my mom going to think of me? Or what is my dad? How are they going to feel? You know? And sometimes at that point, that's not the thing that they need the most. And they don't even know it. The thing that they need most is somebody that can objectively look at it and not be worried about how my mom and dad is going to think of me, not necessarily about how they're going to feel. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about not being compassionate. We're talking about what takes care of them. When somebody says to me, and Sue and I have talked about this before, is I promised my mom or I promised my dad I'd never put them in the nursing home.
Never do that.
Yeah. Well, and if you do it, realize that sometimes the promise that you're making is, or I should say the promise that you're keeping is not the promise that you, is not the person that you made the promise to in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because as your mental capacity diminishes, so do your needs and your wants, you know? So if I'll just use myself as an example, I have an only child. If I give my son directives today, my directives to my son are make sure that I'm well fed, I'm kept clean, that all my emotional needs and my physical needs are met. Now, how he interprets it is different than how I may interpret that. So, and how I interpret that is going to be different today than it is if I were to ever get dementia, because realize that that decision is coming from somebody with a broken brain at that point, right? That their brain isn't functioning properly. The other aspect of powers of attorney is a financial part of it. So when you're looking for a power of attorney for a property, make sure you know it's somebody that can manage money appropriately. And from both sides of it is going to be somebody that knows when they don't know what they don't know. And they're humble enough to go reach out for help elsewhere. I've run into families where certain people in the family that have been designated with those directives think that even though mom or dad is still alive, that they're not going to spend their money. And not, I'm not by there, I'm not saying mom or dad. I'm talking about they think the money is already theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem, because when you're preserving somebody's assets for your benefit, that's a little bit different than preserving those assets to care for them in the long term.
Yeah. I ask that all the time. Like, I kind of try to just get a feeling for which side on the fence they kind of are leaning more towards. And you can tell they make comments about how, oh yeah, I'm going to, they're spending it in their minds. And that just frustrates me. Yeah. I do want to give each of you some opportunities to share a little bit about your background, because I think people don't realize that this role is so comprehensive as to having to deal with emotional and financial and making decisions, that I think somebody as far as a third party is just equipped, right? Better equipped. And I know both of you have such great backgrounds for that. So share a little bit about that.
I have been working in geriatric healthcare for over 30 years. I have a master's degree in gerontology. So this is really my life's work. I worked in different aspects of healthcare. So I understand when someone goes into the nursing home, what expectations are, what things to look for, what things to ask, as well as independent and assisted living. I understand home healthcare. I understand hospice care and when that might need to come into play. I can work with families through all of that. I've been doing this for over 30 years. So I've worked with hundreds of families over this time in order to help them through this process. I've written 2 books on caregiving and aging. I don't see me doing anything else because I'm just wired up to do it. So that's my background.
Awesome. Ryan?
So I owned another company before Life with Dignity. It's actually the same company, only I changed the direction and the services that we provide. So it originally was working with productivity and life management. And I worked specifically as a hoarding specialist. I worked with people that had hoarding disorder. And I did that for 17 years. And when I worked with a lot with the geriatric population, our seniors, and realized early on that they had a lot of support needs that weren't being met. Congruently, I had a client that she had a mental health issue, and she was in a relationship with someone that passed away, and she needed a guardian. And her attorney asked me to be her guardian. And I resisted it for a while, but I was looking for ways to provide support for our other clients. And this started to seem like it was symbiotic. So I got a certification in guardianship, and the attorney felt that we were doing such a good job that he asked me to take on other clients. And that's how Life with Dignity and Living Life with Dignity were birthed. And so I have a background as a hoarding specialist. I'm a certified guardian, and I also am a CDP, certified in dementia practitioner. So, and I work with guardianship on both the healthcare part and the property part, but Sue heads our geriatrics part. So I have nominal, that's more her wheelhouse than mine. Mine is more the estate and the property part of it. And dealing with those folks that have more mental health issues like hoarding disorder. The other part of that is I have a family member that has schizophrenia. And during that time, it was really difficult navigating that. Sue helped me through that. That was even before Life with Dignity started. And so I began to see this need for people that had mental health issues and people that had geriatric issues. And so kind of birthed it from there.
Wonderful.
A key thing about Fran is that she's a certified aromatherapist. And over the past few years, bringing in aromatherapy has really helped us on many cases with our clients to actually bring in their aromatherapy as opposed to them going on some medication that could cause all kinds of, you know, different side effects. Not that medications are bad. We still believe people should be on medications if they need them, but there's some circumstance where aromatherapy really comes into play, and her certification and that, her background in that, is so important in how we've kind of directed care for a lot of people, especially those that we're guardian for.
Yeah, that's great. And first time I heard that. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So it kind of goes along with the whole vision that I had when I switched the company from what we did before to now, because I saw a great need for reducing psychotropic medications in facilities and communities, and wanted to be able to talk the talk and walk the walk with doctors. Mm-hmm. And that's why I got the clinical certification, because in order to incorporate it in a care plan, I needed to be able to address any contraindications or interactions with any medications or conditions that they had. It's a little bit more complex than just somebody using an oil.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be able to speak very well on it and to be able to integrate it into what we provided, because and a holistic approach is what we're looking at when we're working with our clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe in that too, because medicine can only do so much, and there's so many side effects. We all know that. So holistic, I think, is always good to look at other options.
I could do a whole different podcast on
that. I know, we probably could. That'll be good. Yeah, I'd love to hear more. But I do want to switch gears to just kind of sharing with people on your process and how we kind of introduce you and onboarding a client. And I do want to do it in a sense of sharing kind of one of the more recent ones that you're working with our clients who are, so it was a husband and wife, no kids, and husband was having already health challenges, and wife, I could tell, was already, let's say, discombobulated. You know, she has a hard time understanding and remembering things. And I can tell that right from the get-go. And in a sense of we've been clients, they've been clients for a long time with me. So I knew her husband and the two of them had such energy. And then this more recent meeting, I was noticing she's really just needing more help. So that's when I called Living Life with Dignity. I said, you got a doctor, please help her. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that you're helping her because they have no one. It's so often that they have no children, they have no one. And really Sue and Fran have done such an excellent job in, you know, taking her on. So that's kind of the thought. It would be great for you to share a little bit about what happened with her.
Yeah, I'm going to let Sue start on this one because she was a rock star always is a rock star, but in the very beginning, her intervention was pivotal for this lady. So Sue, you go ahead and share.
So when we first were introduced to her, I had given her a call, got some background. The husband had gone into the hospital. Then he had gone into rehab. He had been in and out of the hospital a few times. And especially during COVID, so this was, you know, early last year, at the beginning of the year, she was not able to go into the facility to see him. So she had not seen, at the time that we talked, she had not seen her husband in months. She was hard of hearing, still is hard of hearing. So if people called her, she didn't understand what they were saying to her on the phone, especially when he was in the hospital. So she may have been agreeing to different procedures and whatnot that she had no idea what these doctors were saying, especially if there was an accent, it was made it even harder. So when it took a couple contacts for her to agree to meet with me. When we met, she finally agreed to move forward. Within the first 2 weeks that we were together, I was able to call the facility and tell them that I needed to do an assessment. So we were walking through what options there were, because what was happening is the hospital was, or the facility was making decisions about, let's say hospice was one of them. So she was getting contacted by someone. She had no idea who they were. They were coming to her home, which is concerning. And she thought it was a home health agency. Turns out it was a hospice agency. So I then had to explain to the hospice agency that, you know, we had no idea that this was even something that was brought up. So I contacted the facility, said I needed to come in and do an evaluation, and I needed to bring her with so that she could tell me if this was his normal way of being, how I was going to see him, especially before he went into the hospital. So I actually got her in to see her husband. We were able to do the evaluation. From there, she and I discussed options. Hospice was an option, and bringing him home was also an option, which she was nervous about. And we walked through that process too, saying, you know, here's the thing. If it doesn't work out, if you don't feel comfortable, we can always find another facility where we can transfer him with hospice to that facility if you don't feel comfortable with this happening in your home. So we got him home. We got home health set up for him, 24-hour caregivers. We got hospice set up. He passed away within a few weeks of coming home, but his wish was to come home. So he was home. He passed away at home. And we helped her with cleaning the house out of some of the items that he had stored, organizing things for her. And now actually she's going to be getting a new set of hearing aids, which hopefully will help her with the phone more. So we looked into different technology for her and really have helped her along the way to make better educated decisions. For example, I go with her to doctor's appointments. I wear a mask that is clear in the front because she's hard of hearing. She needs to see my lips. And for some reason, no doctor is wearing see-through masks, which I think is a whole nother issue. But so she doesn't understand anything they're saying. So I'm basically translating for her. And then I write up a report that I send to her so she has everything documented so she can go back and look at that. So we've been working really well with her and now getting to the point where we're looking at, in the next year or so, making a move to a retirement community and different options that might be available for her because she's a really big house and she needs somebody to help her to care for that. And there's some, it's an older home too, and there's some issues coming up. So It's been wonderful. She's fantastic and has been really open to the things that we've been supporting her with. And we've even brought in other support systems, such as one of her close friends, and said, would you be willing to take some of this on so that you can work with her as well as us to make sure that things are being maintained.
And one other thing to point out too, that I think Susan forgot to mention, is this woman is incredibly petite, really, really tiny petite. And she'll always talk about how she's never hungry. And we felt that some of her forgetfulness, some of her inability to, her confusion was dehydration and malnutrition. Mm-hmm. And so we brought in a nutritionist. We got her, was it Meals on Wheels or was it?
No, it's a meal program though.
Program, yeah. Meal program, right. And so she's eating more often and actually saying she's actually starting to get hungry. So a sign of people
put on weight, being, put on weight and she's more
good.
So
you know, knowing what to look for and in what symptoms people are exhibiting that might be things that could be resolved, but simply makes a big difference and can improve the longevity and the quality of somebody's life. That makes a big difference, especially when they're living alone and they're already, this poor woman had been so overwhelmed and confused and exhausted with dealing with all these things with her husband, that she didn't realize how compromised she was for herself, you know, and just having an extra set of eyes and people that care, helping her through the bills, helping her get her long-term insurance covered through her husband, all those other extra things that we were able to help her get, you know, making his funeral arrangements. Those are all things that we did through this whole year and a half process that we've been with her. And so she's kind of feeling like she's gotten her life in order and she can have some cleared space that she can think about what the next step is in her life.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. And thank you. I can't tell you how, like, I feel so much better that she's taken care of by you guys, even though I know it's nice to hear the details. Because as an attorney, I don't need to know all the details, right, but it's just great to hear because they were one of my favorite couples. We had a cooking class as a client appreciation event, and they were the cutest couple, like cooking away. Yeah, so it's just wonderful to see them being taken care of.
Well, and we're so grateful that, you know, you thought of us and that we were able to do that. It's a really great synergy, this team of attorney and case management. It's very helpful. You don't have the bandwidth to do all of that. You know, we don't have your expertise, you know, and folks today need a team to navigate. It's a lot of system to navigate, lots of moving parts.
Yeah. And I say too, that even people with children, right, they think they just naturally think children, but even having you maybe there as a resource or even being named, but then you work with the kids to make those decisions. It's not like, I know you're not going to make them unilaterally anyway. I think is better than trying to, you know, flail around and figure out what, you know, doctor said what and what we're supposed to do with mom now and all of that.
Also just taking time off of work, you know?
Yeah.
So many people are taking time off of work where things are already stressed at work for a lot of us. So taking time off work to go to those doctor's appointments and then not really understanding what's being said at the doctor's appointment or not knowing what questions to ask, what follow-up questions to ask, I think is a key thing. Also kind of being an advocate so that you're almost demanding, I guess it's a bad word, demanding the attention of the doctor, because a lot of times the doctors will come in and be like, hey, okay, how's it going? And then they're like, they're out the door. And I have actually body blocked people from, like, doctors from going out the door because I'm like, we have more questions, you know? So I need you to stay here and listen to these questions because we have a list of questions that we've written down that need to be asked. And so I go through them, or even a lot of doctors will just set up follow-up appointments when there's no need for one. And so asking that simple question, like, well, why would we need to come back? People don't think to ask those questions. And so we know what questions to ask. We know how to get more information and to help families through that, because it's overwhelming and they want to make the right decision for their family member.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so much is so much information. I know we could talk for probably hours on these topics. I do want to just make some final comments of, one is a good time for them to come and talk to you. Like, what is the process of, like, just the initial, you know, mom is diagnosed with something and they're living out of state. Like, what's the first step? I tell them, here, talk to Fran and Sue. And what do you think the next step would be?
Well, we do an initial intake, which will gather a bunch of information about their situation. And as always, it's individualized. You know, there's so many different things that we can do. 9 times out of 10, we want to do some type of assessment, whether it's to go to see the family member or to see the situation. And then once we are able to do an assessment, if when we make that recommendation, they engage our services. I mean, the first step is to share with people what we do and help them share with them how we can help them in their particular situation. Then when they engage with us, we do that assessment. It can be over Zoom a lot of times. So if people are apprehensive about having somebody in their home or coming here, we will go to people's homes. But if they're apprehensive about that and they have the technical skills, we can do a Zoom, especially with kids. We've done Zooms. It makes it a lot easier to do Zoom with multiple people. Yeah. So we can answer all their questions there. And then we will typically work on a plan of action. And then they can choose from that plan of action what they want us to do or what they want to do to maximize their cost savings or to feel like they're engaged in the process. It all depends. Each person is individualized. It's not a take it or take all or nothing situation. It's a delegation. And basically what we do is we oversee it all with the continuity of care in all of it.
Wonderful. Any other comments, Sue, on that?
Fran really hit on it. There's so much that we can do. I mean, there really is. And so it sometimes can become overwhelming because sometimes we share things that we can do that families didn't even think about.
Yeah, so, that's true.
You know, so there's a lot that we can do. And I think Fran and I both know that for families, it becomes very overwhelming and stressful. And it almost gets to the point where you can't even function in it. Mm-hmm. And so we come in and just help step by step, so that they can get to the point where they're feeling like they're coming out of the chaos and that things are more attainable and functional for their loved one.
Yeah, and you know, there are, I just want you to know that it's not just Sue and I. Yeah. So it couldn't possibly just be Sue and I, because there's way too much to do for just two people. So we have, you know, 4 other people that work with us. We have a nurse, we have other case managers, we have someone that does administrative work, and then we have someone that does estate work, you know. So there's 6 of us on any given day juggling all of these different things. And so sometimes, you know, it can be 3 people working on one case, depending on what the needs are. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of work for one person to do as a family member. Mm-hmm. The other part of what's nice about working with us is it's not something I readily like to promote, but oftentimes we can act as a mediator. Mm. So sometimes there can be charges in families, or there can be dissension in families. And sometimes we have a way of balancing that out where we take the emotion out and we just present what is, right? And what needs to be done and help them to see that this is for everybody has the same goal, the benefit of their loved one.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think, you know, mediation would solve a lot of just the miscommunication or the anger towards each other, like family members just having, you know, resentments and things that they've right. built up. So I also want to make note to people's is that your role could be kind of pre-need and this crisis planning kind of thing that we've been talking a lot about. But pre-need, I say, then if you have no one to add as, you know, as your power of attorney agent with their health or property, you could choose Living Life with Dignity. Go and have a phone call with them so that you know what they're all about. And then when the time comes is when obviously that they'll act. It doesn't have to be right this moment, because I have plenty of people just who don't have close people that they could really trust in that role.
Right. And you never know when something's going to happen, because, you know, so if you don't have anything in place, what happens is then you get to the hospital. If you can't make a decision, then it's a whole new situation. Now it's going to court. Now you have to look yes. to see who's going to be appointed for guardianship. And it becomes mm-hmm. just a larger issue than if you had just chosen someone and had that paperwork available.
It also becomes a bigger financial constraint yes. on your estate when you don't prepare. So, and what often happens with us when we become a power of attorney for someone, whether it's for property or healthcare or both, because often it's both. And sometimes people will appoint us as the third thing, which is executor for after they go. Mm-hmm. So what often happens when we're doing that is we do a deep dive initial intake for folks that we become powers of attorney for. And the reason for that is I have to get to know you as if I were your loved one, right? We have to know what your likes, what your dislikes are, what your desires are if you age, how you want to age in place. Do you want to have community? Don't you want to have community? All sorts of things. The foods you like, you know, the smells you hate, those kinds of things, so that when we are actively caring for you, we have some idea of those things. And so what ends up happening is we build that relationship from the onset. And then once a year, we go back and we make sure, has anything changed? Has your health condition changed? Do you have different medications? Have you moved somewhere? And then once we have all that accumulated, what usually organically happens is a relationship where when there is a need, they call us and we develop that in more in-depth personal relationship along the way, so that when the time comes and, you know, something will happen along the way. And we try I'm not saying that we don't do this for every client, but especially for somebody that hires us as a power of attorney that has no one, we're really trying to be there for them and to get to know them. So we'll have deeper, longer conversations with them, because it's hard for them to make this decision. I mean, you're putting someone else's life and your life in our hands, mm-hmm. essentially, right? Yeah. And they have to know that we care mm-hmm. before they're going to trust that we're going to do the best thing for their mm-hmm. benefit.
Right. Exactly. Well, gosh, I want to thank you both for your time today. I can't even, you know, stress how much I appreciate you. And for people that really just have, you know, these questions about what, you know, what types of entities and people that I can use as my agents or executors, I would love for them to be able to connect with you. So we'll certainly continue to do that. So thank you. Thank you again for all your time today. Any final thoughts for us today?
Just thank you so much, Meritess, mm-hmm. for inviting us to share this with your viewers and your listeners. Mm-hmm. And we really appreciate what you do and how you connect us to those folks.
You are welcome. Thank you. Well, thank everyone. Thanks everyone for watching us or listening to us on this podcast. We hope you got a little something out of it and got informed, and give us a call or, you know, if you have any questions on this topic, definitely give us a call or stop by our office. Thank you.